tiny smiling daddy. He lay in his reclining chair, barely awake enough to feel the dream moving just under his thoughts. It felt like one of those pure, beautiful dreams in which he was young again and filled with the realization that the friends who had died or gone away or decided that they didn't like him anymore had really been there all along, loving him. A piece of the dream flickered, and he made out the lips and cheekbones of a tender woman, smiling as she leaned toward him. The phone rang, and the sound rippled through his pliant wakefulness and into the pending dream. But his wife had turned the answering machine up too loud again, and it attacked him with a garbled, furred roar that turned into the voice of his friend Norm. Resentful at being waked, and grateful that for once somebody had called him, he got up to answer. He picked up the phone and the answering machine screeched at him through the receiver. He cursed as he fooled with it, hating his stiff fingers. Irritably, he exchanged greetings with his friend, and then Norm, his voice oddly weighted, said, "I saw the issue of self with Kitty in it." He waited for an explanation. None came, so he said, "What? Issue of self? What self?" "Good grief, Stu, I thought for sure you'd have seen it. Now I feel funny." The dream pulsed forward and receded again. "Funny about what?" "My daughter's got a subscription to this magazine, Self, and they printed an article that Kitty wrote about fathers and daughters talking to each other, and she, well, she wrote about you. Laurel showed it to me." "My God. It's ridiculous that I'm the one to tell you. I just thought it was bad." "No, she didn't say anything bad. I just didn't understand the whole idea of it. And I wondered what you thought." He got off the phone and walked back into the living room, now fully awake. His daughter Kitty was living in South Carolina, working in a used record store and making animal statuettes, which she sold on commission. She had never written anything that he knew of, yet she'd apparently published an article in a national magazine about him. He lifted his arms and put them on the windowsill. The air from the open window cooled his underarms. Outside, the starling's tiny dog marched officiously up and down the pavement looking for someone to bark at. Maybe she had written an article about how wonderful he was, and she was too shy to show him right away. This was doubtful. Kitty was quiet, but she wasn't shy. She was untactful, and she could be aggressive. Uncertainty only made her doubly aggressive. He turned the edge of one nostril over with his thumb and nervously stroked his nose hairs with one finger. He knew it was a nasty habit, but it soothed him. When Kitty was a little girl, he would do it to make her laugh. "Well," he'd say, "do you think it's time we played with the hairs in our nose?" And she would giggle, holding her hands against her face, eyes sparkling over her knuckles. Then she was 14 and as scornful and rejecting as any girl he had ever thrown a spitball at when he was that age. They didn't get along so well anymore. Once they were sitting in the rec room watching TV, he on the couch, she on the footstool. There was a Charlie Chan movie on, but he was mostly watching her back and her long, thick brown hair, which she had just washed and was brushing. She dropped her head forward from the neck to let the hair fall between her spread legs and began slowly stroking it with a pink nylon brush. "Say, don't you think it's time we played with the hairs in our nose? Who wants to play with the hairs in their nose? Hairs in the nose, hairs in the nose." She bolted violently up from the stool. "Daddy, you are so gross, you disgust me." She stormed from the room, shoulders in a tailored jacket of indignation. Sometimes he said it just to see her exasperation, to feel the adorable, futile outrage of her violated girl delicacy. He wished that his wife would come home with the car so that he could drive to the store and buy a copy of Self. His car was being repaired, and he could not walk to the little cluster of stores and parking lots that constituted town in this heat. It would take a good 20 minutes, and he would be completely worn out when he got there. He would find the magazine and stand there in the drugstore and read it, and if it was something bad, he might not have the strength to walk back. He went into the kitchen, opened a beer, and brought it into the living room. His wife had been gone for over an hour, and God knew how much longer she would be. She could spend literally all day driving around the country, doing nothing but buying a jar of honey or a bag of apples. Of course, he could call Kitty, but he'd probably just get her answering machine, and besides, he didn't want to talk to her before he understood the situation. He felt helplessness move through his body, the way a swimmer feels a large sea creature pass beneath him. How could she have done this to him? She knew how he dreaded exposure of any kind. She knew the way he guarded himself against strangers, the way he carefully drew all the curtains when twilight approached, so that no one could see them walking through the house. She knew how ashamed he had been when at 16 she announced that she was a lesbian. The Starling dog was now across the street, yapping at the heels of a bow-legged old lady in a blue dress who was trying to walk down the street. "Damn it," he said.